in everything that we do every day. We want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let the guy play against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, a family of toothless tigers wandered into Bryant-Denny on Saturday and got the Chizik beat out of them. What was your favorite part of this near record-setting beatdown?
Okay, my first question has to be, what does the Chizik beating out of them mean?
Well, they fired Chizik on Sunday.
Well, you and I both kind of saw that coming.
Sure,
right?
Everyone did. Come on.
I mean, but I was surprised that they kind of laid down. They didn't really seem to give a fight. I mean, I was way off on my score. We talked about the point spread. I guess it was a record point spread going into this ball game. And I just said, hey, these guys played together in high school. They've got pride, you know, where this team was a couple years ago. I just thought they'd give more fight, man. I was totally wrong on that score. I didn't think we'd beat them worse than Georgia did.
Well, the whole cliche about, you know, you throw the records out for this kind of game and it's a spirited contest and you don't want to lose it because you hear about it every day, blah, 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 blah. Tom, we've been to, I don't know how many countless games at Bryant-Denny and road games. We have never seen a team come out of, maybe at halftime, but to start the game, we've never seen a team come out so listless, so lethargic, so acting like they didn't want to be there.
Well, you made a comment during the game, right? You know, normally these, you know, teams are bouncing around and doing some silly things their coaches let them do before the kickoff. And these guys were like a young middle school girl in a t-ball game or softball game in the outfield picking daisies. I mean, their minds were somewhere else. I was really surprised at they weren't more up for the game because, you know, just like some of the commentators said after the game, these are still 4- and 5-star guys. And Gene Chizik has recruited very well. And these are still talented football players. And so, you know, I told you after the game that I was disappointed that, you know, that we did not score that last touchdown, especially after I heard Eli say that, you know, 55 was the record we had put on them. And, you know, Coach Saban apologized in the post game to the fans, which, you know, for a second, which I thought was funny. But I did get one little fun little stat, and I'm sure you've seen this, but how freaky is it that the Auburn Tigers, besides being winless in the SEC this year, they couldn't even put up more yards against us than Western Carolina. I couldn't believe it till I saw the guys at AL.com bring this out. They finished with 163 yards of total offense, exactly what Western Carolina did. Not only did the final score be the same, which is funny, but the offensive production was the same as well.
Yeah, absolutely. They had, you know, we'll talk about them just being listless, less yards than the Western Carolina. They had 7 first downs for the day. We had 7 touchdowns for the day. you know, there's some of these stats that you look at and it's like, holy cow, just the disparity for two conference teams. You would, you know, it might be one thing if it were Western Carolina, you know, who's 1-10.
That's my point real quick. They did the exact same offensive yards. Western Carolina, we gave up 163. Auburn, exactly the same number, 163. I mean, I just don't know if I've ever remembered seeing that, you know, from two, like you said, two disparities between Division II and Division I.
Right. You know, part of it comes up, they were listless. They came out just so lethargic from the start and then played that way the whole day. We seem to, on both sides of the ball, and let's jump into the offense a little bit, but on both sides of the ball, we just seem to have our way with them, at least while the starters were in.
Yeah, how did you, you know, we kidded after the Western Carolina game that, man, the second half was kind of boring, right? We were frustrated. while we enjoyed seeing the backups, I was frustrated we could only put up a touchdown the whole second half against Western Carolina. And what do we do in the Auburn game? We do the same thing. I mean, I guess if we want to be nitpicky, you know, Coach Saban at halftime, you know, told Chris Stewart, you know, we've got to be able to we've got to be able to get off the field on third down on defense. He wasn't happy with that in the first half. But on offense, you know, he could have equally talked about the backups, because I'm just not impressed with the ineffectiveness of being able to move the ball in that situation. You would have thought they would have had more continuity.
I would have expected that. And it was, you know, it was really night and day, the performance. You know, the starters go out and score on their first seven possessions, you know, 42 at half, and then the first possession of the second half. So it's 45-0 within minutes of the second half kicking off. We convert our first 11 third downs. Then the backups come in. We don't get another first down. They have four possessions. It's a fumble, punt, and then the game's really over on downs. And then, of course, no more points. I would have wanted a little bit more from our second string offense. And I know you made the comment that, you know, right there at the end of the game, it would have been nice to have gotten the touchdown to, you know, potentially make it 56 with the PAT, which would have set the new record. I think I'm less concerned about what we did just right there at the end than I am the whole quarter and a half that the second team had an opportunity at any point in that stage of the game to score, and they just did not.
No, they didn't. And, you know, to your point, because they weren't able to put some stuff together besides the opening drive for the second string, the coach could have used the excuse at the end of the game to let them keep playing just to end on a good note.
Yeah,
he didn't go there, right? He played the class card, but which was fine. But like you said, I mean, it seems like on that very first drive that Blake Sims was in the game, they were doing some things. They moved the ball until Kenyon Drake had that fumble.
Yep.
You know, they were down to the 7-yard line. But you know, let's talk a little bit about the backups, because we talked about Western Carolina, and you know, it kind of sealed the deal that Blake Sims was the guy, and you know, you've talked about why you think he is the guy. Were you surprised that Philip Ely didn't even get any snaps at all, even in garbage time?
Yes and no. I think that because I feel so firmly that Sims is in really as a running threat, really as a take the air out of the ball type of situation, to bring in Ely would go completely counter to that. You would essentially be handing off to a running backs where you're thin, which is why you're trying to distribute the load with Blake, or you're passing the ball, which is not what you want to do when you're trying to take the air out of the ball. So I wonder if it's just we've kind of backed ourselves into this situation, and it's largely due to injuries, but we've almost backed ourselves into a situation that if we were to bring in the next guy, that we would be, you know, kind of going counter to what we're trying to accomplish. That doesn't mean I don't want to see him play, and that doesn't mean I don't want him to come out there and attempt some passes. But I think that we're going to err on the side of, you know, not rubbing it in, you know, on an opponent. You know, Sims came in, and for, you know, as long as he was in, he attempted one pass, and we'll call it that generously. But we had no intentions of really doing anything other than running the ball there for, you know, a significant portion of the game.
That assumes that your theory is correct on Blake Sims, because obviously you and I are not at practice and we don't know. And that's, you know, that's your best guess. And that could be correct. But assuming he's the backup, and once again, assuming AJ could go down at any time, I think you have to give him more than one pass attempt. You know what I think about the zone read? Okay. You're kicking your state rival's ass. I wish you would have pounded them a little more. So you don't have to throw a 50-yard bomb with Blake Sims, but would it hurt to throw to your tight end for 4 or 5 yards, or throw out of the backfield to your running back? Would it hurt to give him a couple more pass attempts and do it in a classy way to get him experience?
yeah, some short passing. I understand. I'm not going to have an answer that's going to satisfy, you know, your thirst for the back, wanting to see the backup quarterback throw the ball. I'd like to see that too, because I'd really like to know what we have there. And so that's the situation we have. What I can do though is try to understand the situation. And I think that, you know, maybe reluctantly you agree with me. I think that we have a firm theory that we're working with. And so if we kind of build onto that theory, I think that's why we're not seeing Phillip.
Well, like I said, we have to, I mean, that's a theory that you've mentioned. And, you know, I wish we could have Saban in a room and say, look, is this the real deal? And he could tell us whether we're right or not.
Sure.
What else jumped out at you on offense? Because I was surprised that we didn't see as much of TJ. Do you think Eddie Lacy got more of the carries just because he's the veteran and because, you know, he's a senior and those kind of things? Do you think that's why he got more of the load this week?
Yeah, I think that might have. I think he's a junior. I could be wrong on that. I should know.
No, I beg your pardon. He is a junior. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But, you know, the truth of the matter is he is the older of the two. And I think at times he's the more, you know, battering ram, you know, type running back. You know, Yeldon is supremely talented. I think he's a little niftier on his feet. I think he does have a sprained foot. I think he can play with it. But I think it's a situation, let's get him some carries out there. Let's keep him in the speed of the game. But, you know, let's limit the carries that he does get. He seemed to sprinkle his carries more than what we typically do, you know, where Lacy's going to get a couple of possessions and then Yeldon gets a full possession. We seem to sprinkle him in a little bit more and change running backs really mid possession more than what I've seen. And so Lacy really had a full day's work, if you will. You know, he had 18 carries, 131, 2 touchdowns. Yeldon was less explosive. He had 8 carries for 38 yards and a touch. I think that we wanted to keep him fresh in terms of the pace and speed of the game so that he's ready. But then, you know, let's spend some time on the bench, not jeopardizing that sprained foot.
Okay. What did you think about the distribution of the passes? AJ kind of had the formula that I like as far as only attempting about 20 passes. And, you know, we attempted 47 runs and gosh, I wish we'd have done this 2 weeks ago. Given the injuries we have at wide receiver, and we can talk about Kenny Bell in a minute, do you wish you would have seen while AJ was in the game us get the ball to more people than just Amari Cooper and Kevin Norwood? Get some other guys who are going to have to step up and get them some more touches?
Well, yeah, and, you know, Bell did get a catch, but then, you know, he's the one that we need, you know, the stepping up for.
I mean, some of the other guys, given the circumstances,
yeah,
Marvin Shin, Cyrus Jones, those kind of guys.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think I don't have the stats in front of me. I think Shin got a catch. We may have targeted Jones. I don't know. We may have gone to the tight end once. I think we're going to need to distribute where we go with the ball next. You know, I am glad that Amari Cooper is coming back from his injury. And so I guess I want to spend a minute there because he just had a sensational day, put up just really incredible numbers. He has the speed that he is capable of stretching the field in a way that Kenny Bell does or did. And the fact that he seems to be recovered from his ankle injury. I don't know if you saw any limping or hobbling around, but he looked as fresh as he has looked in weeks.
I didn't notice the limping that bugged me about him playing, especially as much as he did against Western Carolina. I definitely think he looked the best he's looked since his injury. But just to go to Kenny Bell for a minute, you know, we kind of kidded in the game before his injury that maybe we need to call him the two-trick pony, because for all of Amari Cooper's benefits with the deep ball, I think the crossing pattern underneath was really – I think Kenny Bell was our best at that. Amari Cooper was a close second, but Kenny Bell, I think, was really starting to come into his own, and that broken leg, I think, is really going to hurt us.
Yeah, we literally, you know, just not long before he was injured, you know, kind of laughed and said, well, maybe he's got a second trick now, because, you know, not only is he the speedster down the field, but he was running those speed crosses, and he's been doing it a couple of weeks. It just seems to, you know, more and more get in a rhythm of him running that route and McCarron finding him and getting comfortable getting him the ball. You know, he has the type of speed. If you can get him the ball in space, you know, he's a threat from anywhere on the field. He was one of the tops in the country in terms of average yards per catch. You know, he was averaging over 25 yards a catch, and of his career touchdowns, I think they were all 30, 35 plus yards and up. So he was a threat. And so on that speed cross, which was really his second trick, it's just unfortunate that he had the injury. And I went back, and it was tough to see how the injury happened kind of in real time in the stadium. I don't know if you had a chance, but I went back and looked at, you know, the tape on that. And what's ironic of our speed merchant running back, our receiver, he gets injured blocking for a running back. And so he's blocking out on the edge. The play comes his way. I think it's Yeldon running the ball, and the defender just kind of reaches out for the running back. Kind of his hands kind of slip down the runner's body, and the would-be tackler sort of rolls. And when he hits the ground and rolls, he rolls up on Kenny Bell, and that's how it gets hurt. That's how he gets hurt.
Man, no, I didn't get a chance to focus on that one play. We had definitely talked about it. That's a shame for your buck 60 receiver who I think was doing better even at that, you know, as far as, you know, blocking away from the ball and doing those little things. That's a shame that he got hurt that way.
Yeah. Well, let me ask a question, and I'm going to borrow some language from, we got an email from Jim, and normally we do mailbag at the end, but he asked a question, and we're on the topic. And I really like the way he asked the question, because he asked the question, I think, in much the way that we would ask the question. He's talking about the wide receivers, and he asked, you know, what's the possibility of us pulling the red shirt on Chris Black? You know, that's been some of the commentary in some press conferences. And then his next question, and this kind of reads like something that that we would say, what does that say about Marvin Chinn and Danny Woodson?
Yeah, I do like the way he asked that question. I think the way Saban answered this, you know, I've thought about this a lot since yesterday, and the way he's been asked twice this question, and the way even some of the, I guess, Kevin Norwood was asked this question, it really makes me think that we're going to see Chris Black. I was going back and forth on this, and I'm surprised to hear myself say this, but I think Chris Black comes in with some such high praise, right? Mm-hmm. That he might be one of these guys that is not going to be here 5 years as a redshirt senior.
Sure.
And he's a competitor from a big name program, and he was here in the spring through the summer, etc. I mean, if he's been going in practice for 2 or 3 weeks and he says, coach, I want to go for a title, I wouldn't do it, but I think we're going to see him.
Well, it's so hard to say that, you know, with 2 games left, that we're going to take a red shirt off a guy that's not played all season. And you feel like, gosh, what a waste, you know, that would be. At the same time, he's a competitor, he's a player, and he knows.
It's wide receiver, right?
At a position that we're thin. And what competitor would not say, look, burn the red shirt, I want to play. And for the betterment of the team, we have a chance to accomplish something here, and I don't want to be the reason that we don't accomplish it. And so I think from, you know, if you were to sit down with Chris Black and have that conversation, that I think that that's how he would answer the question. And if you look back at Saban's career, you know, if you look back at his time here, once he sort of makes the decision and there's a point in the season that he decides, okay, you know, unless something changes, this is how we're going to play out with redshirts, you know, because he has a plan. And so I respect and appreciate that he has a plan. Sometimes things do bend the other way. This just happened to be, you know, Kenny Pell's ankle bending the wrong way. But if you go back and you look at his career, and for the life of me, I can't remember the player's name. I should have looked it up, but he had a very similar situation. I think it was a DB at LSU where he stripped the red shirt off of a DB, I think, in the SEC championship game, and that was the season that they went on to win their national title under Saban. And so in a very like-kind situation, he's done it.
Well, and the reason I said wide receiver is not because that's where we're thin, which is obviously the reason that they would even consider it, which I agree with you on, but there are two positions that other coaches, including Saban, have talked about are positions that players can come in and participate right away.
Sure.
And they are running back and wide receiver. And so it's not like a tight end where you've got to know the blocking schemes and you know, it's not obviously offensive line or his complex defense. I mean, I think those are the only two positions on the field where maybe you can get away with that.
Yeah, I agree, because you can distill it down to we're going to line you up in the slot and you're going to run one of these four routes.
Correct.
You don't have to know anything more than that. And when we need to expand the offense and do something different, you're going to come stand next to me on the bench, as opposed to a lineman or a defensive back, if you will, where you need to be versatile and you need to be on the field. At a wide receiver position, we can have a very select menu of plays and routes that he's going to participate in and still be productive. You know, I don't know how much you want to, how much stock you want to necessarily put into some of the folks who claim to be watching 7-on-7 over the summer and all of that stuff. But, you know, there are those that are talking about how Chris Black was the impressive freshman receiver early in camp and over the summer.
Even more so than Cooper, right?
Even more so
where you're going? Yeah.
Yeah. And so you think, and it's easy to want to say that now, but if there's a little bit of truth in that, now he's not going to come in game one and blow the doors off anyone, because, you know, Cooper didn't do that either. But if he can get the practice and get the reps, get a little bit of run against Georgia, there's only a week to prep, but then have the whole bowl season to play potentially in the title game, you know, or bowl game, but hopefully the title game, then that starts to make a little more sense.
Oh, sure. And that DB, man, your memory's pretty good. That DB, which I would not have remembered his name. His name was Caron Gordon. And he actually got to play against Arkansas before they beat Georgia and then in the Oklahoma. So he played the last three games of the season, but he was a freshman. So you were spot on with that. But no, I think, you know, going back to Jim's question, you know, Danny Woodson, you know, as you helped me remember in the game, you know, I'm thinking he should be a have not redshirted already. And obviously he has. And I'm sitting here saying, well, why is he not making a bigger impact? You know, he came in as a four-star receiver. He's got some good pedigree. And I think he's only been thrown the ball to one or two times. And Marvin Shin, just the same way, he's only been thrown the ball to one or two times, you know, and it's very spot duty. And so when you look at these receivers, I think it speaks to the fact that while he wouldn't say this on the mic, you got to think he's got more confidence in Chris Black than he does these other two guys in a big game situation right this second. To be fair to them, they all have time in their career.
Yeah, they're all youngsters, and they could all go on and have tremendous careers. And so, you know, we're not throwing anybody out. We're just taking the pulse as it stands right now. And look, Shin's getting a little more run. He actually came in early last week to at least run some routes. Danny Woodson, I did not even see him on the participation chart at all. So
he was not dressed out.
Yeah. And so, you know, was he late for a meeting or something? You think, you know, hey, I can learn that lesson by watching someone else, but, you know, maybe not. And that's my speculation. We don't know what the story is. And to my knowledge, Coach hasn't said quite so openly as he did last week about Drake. But my point really is this: they've both been in the program, this is their second seasons. So they have been around, you know, both highly recruited, both, you know, seemingly have a lot of talent and a lot of potential and a lot of upside. They're just not there yet. And if Chris Black is there, then, you know, it's the point in this season where you have to have a conversation with him. And I think the player does have a little bit of say, you know, maybe you talk to the parents. I don't know what really truly the protocol is for a coach in that situation, but I think you have those conversations and you have them early in the week. So you have that out of the way. And then you just practice like heck this week and see, you know, is he healthy? He's been medically cleared, but is he healthy? Can he take a hit? You know, can he stay on his routes? And if he shows a little bit, then I think you put him in. And I think what it says for Shannon Woodson, it doesn't say that their careers are over. It says, gosh, they've been passed now by two true freshmen. They have to really make hay this spring, or it may be the clock ticking on their careers.
Oh, sure. And I think going back to Chris Black, I think there are two opportunities for him, which this team needs right now with the losses that they have had at the wide receiver position. Number one is, I think having him run the go route, high school wide receiver can run the go route.
Sure.
There's no learning there on the play. So you give Amari Cooper some breathers, if you would, or you keep some gas in his tank for the more complicated routes, or that big third and eight sideline pass you need, by not making him have to run so many 50, 60 yard go routes.
Sure. Number two, come in and run nine routes just to spread the defense.
Yes.
And, you know, if you get over the top of somebody, we'll throw it to you, but you're our designated nine.
Yes. Yes. And number two is, without DeAndre White, Amari Cooper has had to burden this load of throwing the ball or receiving the ball in the flats behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And they tried Marvin Shin one time. That is not his thing. Kevin Norwood, not really physical enough to be his thing. Well, he's done it some. He's actually the second best that's done it so far. But DeAndre White was doing really good at that. So that's another role that this isn't rocket science. You line over here next to this wide receiver to the far right. When the ball is snapped, you take two steps back. I throw it to you. You make a move and you go. And so those are two areas that I think would be really good for him. One other quick point I want to make is, when we came out of the A-Day game, we talked about T.J. Yeldon, and we remembered how he looked across the middle against C.J. Mosley.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the other guy that jumped off the page for me when the second string was given the first string defense fits was Chris Black.
Yeah.
Those were the two numbers that jumped off the page from everybody that day. Number four and number five.
Yeah, and that's a good point. If he had not been, you know, it's one thing over the summer, you know, it's one thing, you know, early in fall camp, but the fact that he went through spring drills and A-Day, you know, I know that he's still just a freshman, but he's had a lot of practices for a freshman. And so to step in having that backdrop, he's not a true, he's not like a freshman that just showed up, you know, August 30.
Correct.
I do want to just real quickly correct myself, you know, just to underscore the Shin and Danny Woodson. I said that they would have potentially been beaten out by two true freshmen, but if you count Cyrus Jones in the mix, it would be three.
And so that would have to be, you know, very good motivation for you. That is a good point real quick too, is Cyrus Jones came in with some pedigree. And while Cyrus Jones has done a couple things, I haven't seen the flashes from him yet. And maybe I'm just spoiled by Amari Cooper, but can a Cyrus Jones fill those two wide receiver routes I just talked about that prevents you from having to play Black? Because in the press conference, some people on the boards, you know, said Saban was just really just putting up a challenge, right? He was just putting out there, hey, guys, who wants it? And so I'd love to be at practice this week and watching the motivation with which Chris Black and Cyrus Jones both plays, because I think either one of them could vie for that deal in different facets.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's not discount, you know, Christian Jones either as an opportunity to step in. And I guess no pun intended, ring the bell. I want to be the guy that steps in. I want to be the guy that carries more of a workload. And so there's a number of guys, and certainly that should light a fire. That should be motivating. And if that's the extent of, you know, Saban's intent, I'm fine with that. Or if he's willing to take that next step, but then, you know, maybe doesn't have to because people step up, I'm fine with that certainly as well.
No, absolutely. What else? Anything else on offense jumps out at you?
You know, you mentioned it, and I had it underlined here. McCarron had a quote-unquote Tommy stat line, you know, 15 to 21, 216. Another four touchdowns, that's nice. But the offensive line performed well. There were no sacks. And so I was definitely pleased, you know, definitely pleased with that. So, you know, maybe we mentioned Barrett Jones.
Yep.
And I got a kick out of, you know, he blew his shoe. And so he ran out. Ryan Kelly, you know, they were we were driving to the north end zone, and we were just right there inside the 10. And the offensive linemen typically are on the sideline closer, you know, the far end of the sideline, and so closer to the south end zone. And so he had to run all the way up the field, you know, made it. We could have run a play, but I think coach, you know, you wanted him to score a touchdown later in the game for the record. But I think coach was, you know, said, nope, we're going to call a timeout here. I want this touchdown. And so I don't think that's any knock on, you know, Ryan Kelly. He did his job, you know, to come in and be ready to perform. But I think the coaching staff said, no, we're going to call a timeout here. We're going to get Barrett's shoe back on, taped up and ready to go. And we're going to go in and score this touchdown. And that's exactly what we did.
Well, I started to say it was either you or Eric. It might have been Eric next to us there that made the comment that, no, we burn a timeout for Barrett Jones.
Yeah.
We might not burn a timeout for one of the other offensive linemen, but for the guy calling the plays at the line of scrimmage, we do.
Yeah. Hey, and I got a kick out of, and I just had the benefit of some extra time on Sunday to look at some of the game tape. But, you know, Vern and Gary Danielson, you know, they kind of had a joke, which was funny, but, you know, there's something to it. You know, when Barrett Shue, you know, got the back of his foot stepped on, and so the shoe came off. I think Danielson made the joke that, you know, they're going to have a staff meeting tonight talking about how we tie our shoes around here. And, Vern, you know, Vern said that's just part of the process. And so it's a funny line, but, and I'm not saying that we're going to go do a big investigative study on tying shoes. I don't mean that quite so literally, but I think there's a little bit of truth to the fact that anything that we can do to improve, we're not going to leave any opportunity. You know, we're not going to ignore any opportunity. So I don't quite literally mean that they're going to investigate shoes, but it does speak to a mindset that says, hey, maybe we ought to ask the question.
No, sure. Real quick, going back to AJ McCarron, I do want to mention that this is one of those I'd love to be a fly on the wall that apparently he checked out of a lot of plays in that first half and got out of bad plays and got into good plays. And so they asked Barrett about that in the interviews, and they asked AJ, and they gave you your typical media answers. But just for the listeners, I wish we had the privy of like, yep, here we were in this formation, we were calling this play, and this is what I checked out to. That's the nitty gritty stuff. I wish we had the ability to know some of that.
Well, I saw again, I just saw a clip of one of the interviews with McCarron, and I'm distilling this down probably more than the context that he provided. But, you know, he basically said he was audibling based on the safeties. And so when he saw two safeties deep, he'd audible to a run. When he saw one safety deep, he would check to a pass. And so those were the types of things that he was looking for. Again, I just had the benefit of looking at some of the tape. I think it was on the second drive we checked and changed the pass route. And McCarron rolls out and flings the ball, and there's no receiver there. And so you wonder, you know, what's going on. And you go back and look at it, and coach is going after Kenny Bell to talk to him. And McCarron's just sitting there pointing at himself. You can tell that he had checked the play, and he was taking responsibility to, you know, hey, I checked down and I didn't communicate it clearly to everyone. Coach wasn't buying it because he went after Kenny Bell. But I thought, you know, hey, I like that. That's, you know, showing some leadership there that, you know, even though I checked down, I still have some responsibility to make sure that everyone's hearing the call.
Oh, sure. Hey, flipping to defense for a minute, there was a lot of, you know, we were playing a true freshman quarterback, the third starting quarterback for Auburn this year. And I wasn't really impressed, you know, poor Auburn. Glad you're going through these miseries. But I do have to touch on the lovely couple first down completions on third down against our safeties, it seems like that reared its ugly head yet again in the first half.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I don't know if you're setting me up there, but that's kind of right in the wheelhouse of what we have spent some time talking about, our defense and the alignments and what we're running. And then they scored, or not scored, but they got a couple of very quick first downs. And I even saw in Saban's postgame press conference that he commented to this, but I noticed that the first two and maybe the first three first downs, you know, third down conversions that they got off of us, they got those out of our dime.
Off Robert Lester.
Yes. And so we were running a dime, which that's a whole conversation that I want to have. But, you know, Saban mentioned, he used the term mis-executions. And so, you know, that he said, we had the right play called, we had the right defense called, we just had some mis-executions that led to their conversions. And so it's one thing to hear the coach say that. With my eyes, you know, we're counting the DBs, and I know that that was happening against a dime. And I just want to spend a minute. We are playing an awful lot of dime. I think we had to play it against A&M because their style of play, and we struggled with it. And we have been playing a lot of dime each of the last 2 weeks.
And we didn't have to play it much at all in the last 2 weeks, given the sets of the offense.
No, we did not. And so here's sort of my pet theory on this one. And what's very interesting is, we did a lot of things to get cornerbacks on the field. And so we played a lot of dime. We played a lot of base too, our true base, not our nickel, you know, safety nickel base, but our true base, what coach would call base, with just four DBs. We played a lot of that. Then we played some nickel. And I saw us in a nickel alignment once with four cornerbacks on the field, which I have never seen that. We've talked about a nickel with four safeties, but we were running the nickel with four cornerbacks. And then we would run a dime, and we've seen us run a dime with four safeties. We were running a dime at times with four corners. And here's what I think we were doing. Coach made the comment after the A&M game, for that game, that, you know, I wish we had gotten, you know, I should have gotten more reps for Geno Smith, you know, before this game. And so we kidded last week against Western Carolina that he played nearly the whole game. And so I think that we are looking for opportunities to get cornerbacks on the field, to give them experience. And it's coach kind of learning from his experience. You know what? I don't know when I'm going to need another cornerback. And the way we've got guys going down, I'm going to get as many of these guys as many reps as I possibly can. And the analogy, and I wish I'd used this last week because I thought about it, I just didn't use it. The analogy is, if you want to learn how to be a snake handler, why don't you start with a little garden snake that's not going to kill you if it bites you, and then learn the mechanics of handling a snake so that then you can, you know, wow everyone with handling the poisonous snakes. Well, let's take a Western Carolina and an inept Auburn offense that really is no threat to us. They can't bite us and hurt us. And let's roll as many corners out there as we can to give them some experience. So when they have that experience, then we can move up in competition in a Georgia with Aaron Murray or a Notre Dame, you know, whatever it is. And we need to then play some additional corners. We're ready for that.
That's very plausible. I like that one better than the Blake Sims one, especially given who we're about to play, right? Because, I mean, we can talk about this in a minute, but just imagine if they had not lost one of the wide receivers that they lost. I mean, if you look at their stat line right now, they are probably the most balanced team that we have played all year. And when you look at the number of receivers that they have distributed the ball to, it is downright scary.
Yes.
And so a Geno Smith and a John Fulton is critical going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, I want to spend some more time just on our defense. And I'm gonna make a statement in response, and I'm going to segue back to just talking about our defense in this game. But I would not be surprised if we don't see more of our nickel back to what you and I call our base, but then it be a corner nickel. And so we've got you know, maybe Gino at the star instead of Vinny, those types of arrangements. And so we showed a couple of different things on Saturday. I think we come out with sort of a merged version of what we see with what we saw. And so we go back to our nickel, but it's a corner nickel with three corners out there. And if Vinny is seemingly getting a lot of run, I'm not ready yet to call him a linebacker, but he seems to be getting a lot more run when we're in that dime at a more of a linebacker position. So I don't know if we're going to move him. I'd like to see, you know, maybe what he does during A-Day, but I wouldn't be surprised if he is making the transition to linebacker.
Well, he is definitely not there yet. I will say my analysis of that is that he has lost his nickel position to Geno Smith. As young as Geno is, he's not that much older than Geno. And let's face it, he was a linebacker in high school.
Sure.
And so I think a couple of things from that alignment. We talked about how he is dynamic at the line of scrimmage. And so in the last 2 weeks, you and I have noticed when Geno Smith has come in that he has covered the slot, not Vinny. And Vinny has sat there next to CJ Mosley, where if I need to run out there and cover this running back for a second, I can do that better than a linebacker. And if I need to do a delayed blitz to the quarterback, which is what I love to do, I can do that because I'm savvy enough to jump up in the air and bat the ball down and maybe pick it off and even return it for a touchdown. Let's face it, he's dynamic. And so you and I have noticed him at the line of scrimmage a lot. We have not seen him covering the slot, which is great because that is not his strength. You and I also noticed in the base that we played that Nick Perry came in instead of HaHa. And that's been different from the past couple weeks. And so I think it's important for the listeners that we talk about that a la some other defensive players in years past, maybe Nick Perry has found his role.
Well, I get a kick out of this, right? Because, and I'm going to pat myself on the back, you know, maybe just a little bit because, you know, in a joking fashion, because, you know, last week, I think you made the point and it was the right, true, valid point. You said, hey, I think HaHa is taking over for Nick Perry at the starting safety. And just on a whim in last week's show, I said, I agree with you in the nickel and the dime because we've seen that with our own eyes. We've so rarely run our true, you know, what Saban calls our base with true four DBs that I can't yet say that he's taken over the starting position in that formation. And what do? We trot out in the four DB and Nick Perry's out there. So,
and I think it's funny for the listeners that you make the quick assessment of what we said last year about Darrell Harris. And don't get me wrong, Nick Perry is playing college football, which I never did. So sure. I'm not taking anything away from the kid, okay? I wish I could have been a scholarship player for the University of Alabama. But just like we said last year with Darrell Harris was a starting linebacker in our base 3-4. The only problem is we hardly ever was on the field in our 3-4.
Sure.
And so if Nick Perry can be on the field more in whatever formation it is to become more and more comfortable, I'm okay with that. And I will say that when he was in the game in that formation in the past couple of weeks, I have noticed him trying to direct traffic more. I've noticed him coming in on the inside runs and trying to stick his head in there and, you know, basically try to make the play 4 or 5 yards from the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
I don't know if he's more comfortable because he's not being asked to do as much. I mean, what's the analogy I'm looking for, David, where the game is slowing down? It's almost like Nick Perry is not having as much piled on him in the week of preparation. And I have noticed him to be a little freer in the past couple of weeks.
Sure. Well, it's almost, it's, you know, there's less things on his plate, right? And so it's almost like, you know, when you have a young quarterback and you say, look, we're going to sprint you out to this side, and I only want you to look at this half of the field. That's all you need to think about. And so it's almost the situation of, okay, we run a base, we run a nickel, and we run a dime. And so if you're a starting safety, you think presumably that you're in for all of those types of formations.
Right.
Well, that's a lot of content. And then when you start, you know, nickels and dimes and you start mixing up the count or the distribution of corners and safeties, there's almost a multiplier effect in terms of how much you need to know. Sure. And so, well, okay, let me take some of that off your plate. Perry, concentrate on when we're in a base, you're our starting safety in that base. If we go to, you know, maybe a safety nickel or a safety dime, then you have a role there. But those are sub packages that are not our primary packages. And so there's less things that he has to focus on and worry on. The same is true the other way, that HaHa, if he's truly the replacement, kind of picking up the other half of that position, if you will, then he only has to learn the other half of the position.
And I think it's important. I want to touch on what you just said there. That right there might be something that they should have done sooner in the season if we really want to be critical, because, you know, we enjoy being nitpicky. And who knows, it might allow both of those kids to springboard a little more. Also, it might allow Vinny to springboard a little more, because we've talked about three heads, right? But we didn't have one person. Well, guess what? If you can have three talented college football players doing that one thing that they do really, really well, you're still in a pretty good situation.
Yeah, and could we have started that earlier in the season? Yeah, absolutely. You know, Jarek Williams goes down, and so maybe, you know, what was his role going to be, you know, relative to those positions? You know, we don't know. At what pace are they picking it up and learning it, you know, through the season? At what pace are they picking it up versus what pace do you think they're going to? And so you reach a point and you say, maybe I need to alter course here, because they're not where they need to be. And so let me, you know, make a shift here. Those are the types of things that we don't know. We can just speculate based on what we see. But I think we see enough to, you know, paint an interesting picture, if not 100% accurate.
Oh, sure. What else on defense jumped out at you, if anything?
I just thought it was funny when we were in our true, you know, when we go to our true base, which you don't see a lot, then you see other things that you don't see a lot. And so, you know, DePriest and Hubbard backing off from their linebacker positions and going out into coverage, seeing Hubbard lined up over a slot receiver. Boy, if I were the offensive coordinator for Auburn, I would have written that. I would have written that formation down and said, yes, I need to figure out how to pick on that.
Yes.
And so it's funny to see the things that you don't see, or, you know, see the things that emerge from a formation that we rarely see, that to me were very, very interesting, but then not really, I don't know if they weren't picked up on, or they certainly were not taken advantage of by the Auburn offense.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, I want to touch on real quick, just the play of Jeffrey Pagan. I know we're kind of running long here, guys. Just be patient with us. We can talk about this stuff 24 hours a day, but Jeffrey Pagan is also getting some more run, as you call it, week in and week out. And he's not busting on the scene yet, but he made a big stop in the game and was real excited about it with the quarterback in the backfield, tackle for loss. And I think we're seeing the emergence of one of our young stars slowly but surely.
Oh, absolutely. I like some Pagan, and he's getting into the game earlier and earlier, and is just a player that I think we're just going to continue to enjoy to watch. I like the fact that, you know, compare us to an Auburn, their season is done. And so not only do we get this week, and not only do we get to play in these games, because that's exciting, but when you talk about these young players and these young players developing, we get this week of practice, and then we get, what is it, 15 or 20? I can't remember what the NCAA allows.
Extra practices.
But you essentially get the equivalent of another spring practice.
Yes.
And when you talk about young players, I think coaches will tell you that spring practice, you know, where you're not amping up for a season, but spring practice is one of the most critical times for your young players. And so to effectively have a second spring practice for some of these youngsters, that's phenomenal.
Oh, absolutely. Anything you want to say about any of the other backups on defense that you noticed? Because I did see Reggie Raglan out there more. He seemed a little more comfortable than he had been.
Sure.
Anybody else caught your eye on defense on the backups?
Well, you know, one thing that caught my eye was Brandon Ivory going out with an injury. I had a hard time finding any material on that. I did find that he had a sprained ankle. I saw Saban comment that, you know, everyone knew about Kenny Bell's injury. That was sort of the highlight. And then there was very little written about anyone else's injury. And so Ivory was injured. Callaway was injured. I have not seen Boo about him and his injury. The only thing that I saw was kind of the blanket statement from Saban that, hey, there's a couple guys that probably won't practice today, Monday, but we expect them to be ready to go on Saturday. And so I assume that he's talking about maybe a banged up Yeldon, an Ivory, and a Callaway, but I've not seen anything specifically written about those guys.
Well, apparently Ivory must have had the other ankle sprained earlier in the year. And so he did say in his press conference that this sprain is not as bad as the other one yes. that he has already had to deal with.
Yes.
But you and I noticed a slow guy, though. I mean, he's a big guy, but I can't help but think that's going to impact his effectiveness a few days from now.
Yeah, I agree. And so what I think we see, because that's a position, and it's college football and it's scholarship limitations, it's easy to be thin at a lot of different positions, but just because, you know, the headcount. But that's a position where, you know, once you get past Jesse Williams, we're at a Brandon Ivory who's never really sort of burst on the scene. He's played well at times this season, and so he seems to be emerging. But behind him, you know, we have Darren Lake, a true freshman, who's gotten some play, but not a whole lot. And we kind of ask ourselves, you know, what the situation is there. And so what I think will happen if Ivory is limited is we're going to see Quentin Dial slide down to that inside spot. He's a big boy, can at least take on some double teams. And so it'll be interesting to see kind of how we distribute his snaps on the outside, because he's typically an end, but he's a huge end. So I think that he can slide down and we can bring someone else in. So that'll be interesting to kind of see how that plays.
Yeah, and we probably will see just as much of Damian Square doing that, because last year when we had injuries at that position, Damian had to play a lot over the nose position as well. Anything else at defense before we jump to special teams?
No, let's go to special teams.
You know, just once again, just the consistency from our punting game. You know, we've just kidded for years about just take them out on the quad and just let's just have a dry run. And, you know, I can just play last week's podcast here, just talking about the performance of Cody, you know, 48.5 average on two punts.
On two punts.
Okay, I'll only get two punts, but one's going to be inside the 20 and one's going to be a 50-yarder.
Yep.
I mean, in comparison real quick, so the Bama fans can remember where we used to be with this. Yeah. Auburn's punter had seven punts for an average of 34 yards.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing that jumped out at me.
Yeah, we've been on that end of that deal, and that's no fun. And, you know, Saban talks about drive start and field position and sort of the lost yards or the hidden yard opportunities. And from a defensive, you know, pushing someone back perspective, you know, an extra 10 yards on a punt and good coverage to sustain that, that's significant. You know, if you consistently are adding yards to what a team has to drive, and then you have a team that sort of, you know, starts to take away components of what an offense wants to do and forces a team to really hard earn drive the field, that 10 or 15 yard differential can really add up over the course of the game.
Oh, sure it can. Anything else jumped out at you from the special teams?
The fact that nothing else jumped out at me probably is what jumps out to me, you know, and I know that probably doesn't make sense, but, you know, there wasn't a stellar return. There wasn't a miscue. There wasn't, you know, the only thing that really stood out was Mandel's play, and his play was going to stand out. You know, we did not punt until into the fourth quarter. And so there was an opportunity that we would not punt. And that would have been what stood out to me. So nothing, I don't think anything else on special teams really stood out to me other than, you know, Mandel's performance.
All right. So I got something for you.
All right.
How do you play a team that punts seven times and you don't have any punt return yardage on the stat sheet? Didn't that seem kind of quirky? I mean, I know how it happened in the game because they downed the ball several times and we had two fair catches, but what's the odds of the opponents punt seven times and you fair catch it twice, and the other five times it either goes out of bounds or it gets downed. No opportunities to make plays on the ball. Did that have to do with the crappy punting? And so, you know, the ball was so short that we couldn't get to it, or it was such great field position, he just told them to stay away from it?
Yes.
Okay. I saw that as we were preparing for the – as we were preparing for the show and I saw the stat line, no punt return yards, I thought, I was like, okay, I don't remember any punt return. How is that possible with seven punts?
Right.
Who gets your mini game ball starting with offense?
You know, I'm going with Cyrus Kwonjo, and that's probably where you were going to go.
Shouldn't have let you go first.
You know, he stoned Corey Lemonnier, who's a first-round talent. I think that, you know, that's something that I'm sure had some scouts, you know, were very interested to see how that matchup would play out. And, you know, Cyrus seemed to really kind of control that situation. So for, you know, a redshirt freshman to come into that type of situation, very pleased with his performance on Saturday.
Well, A, I shouldn't have let you go first, but B, you pronounced that last name a hell of a lot better than I would have butchered it.
Well, of course.
So I guess I'm glad that that you went ahead and did that, because, you know, I guess we got to give the kid's last name some respect.
We did try.
We did talk about that, though. I mean, he just mauled him, and how freaking exciting is that to think about what lies ahead with that?
Yes.
But as far as offense, I guess I would have to go and give it to Kevin Norwood. I mean, Kevin Norwood didn't even play the week before. We talked about how, you know, he's really integral for this team, and it's obvious with the injuries to wide receiver, but to come back and have five catches and two of those be touchdowns and quite frankly hold his own on the stat sheet with Amari Cooper, I think he needed that game before we go into the Georgia Dome.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. He had sort of one of his patented sideline catches, which he's very good at getting the toes in. You know, I talked about Amari Cooper. You know, if we're going to lose Bell, at least, you know, not that it's a bright side, but at least Cooper's coming back from injury and seems to be fully healthy and ready to go. You could say the same thing about Norwood. He seems to be back to full strength. And so I think that they can, just by virtue of being healthy, shoulder a lot of the load, and then who's going to step up and kind of fill in the gaps?
Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely. Well, hey, I'm going to jump to mini game ball on defense. I'm just going to give it to Jeffrey Pagan. I'm not going to bore the listeners with what I've already said, but he just keeps moving up that stat sheet, man. And I think he's really, really coming into his own. And I just like the physical makeup of this kid. He strikes me as a guy that we're going to be moving up and down the defensive line. And one minute he's going to be at right end killing the quarterback, one time left end. Next time he's going to be over the center, and a year from now beating the center's butt in the middle. I think he's going to be exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we talked about, you know, at some point it's just running, you know, just listing names. I think Quentin Dial, if Ivory's not able to go get some run at the middle, I think you're right. I think Square steps down. But I think that Pagan can be a guy that can get some reps in the middle too, because he's so big. And so I think that while we may be thin at a true nose guard, especially with experience, I think we have some people that we can rotate into that situation. And Pagan is going to be one of those guys that, you're right, I think we're going to move him around just because of the matchups that he can create and his performance. He's a good one.
Absolutely. Who gets yours on defense?
Well, I'm just going to stick with a theme. Same guy I gave it to last week, Geno Smith. You know, just the fact that he seems to be more free and more loose and more confident with every possession that he's out there on defense. And I'm going to say this, and I don't say this to take away from Pagan at all.
Isn't that breaking some kind of rules, man? The same guy 2 weeks in a row?
Well, you're the one that spent all last season breaking the rules on the mini game ball. So
okay, I'm just checking. I'm sorry. Go ahead. What are you trying to say better about him than my Pagan?
No. Here's a point I want to make, that he is playing a lot more free and a lot more loose, not loose necessarily, but a lot more confident, a lot more comfortable. And on the play that Pagan had, the tackle for loss, and I take nothing away from Pagan, because, you know, he you know, beat his man and was chasing the play down and made the tackle. But Geno lined up at that star position, and we've seen Javi do it, and we've seen Milliner do it, where they'll kind of creep up, and they're going to blitz, and you can kind of see it coming. But he creeped up to the line of scrimmage, and it was a running play to his side. And the fullback, Geno took on the fullback and just completely blew up the fullback, which held up the runner. I'm not saying Pagan wouldn't have made the play. I'm not taking away from him, but it helped. But that's, you know, that's where it was sort of a tandem teamwork. He blew up the fullback, which blew up the running lane, which allowed Peyton to capture and tackle him, you know, behind the line of scrimmage. And so I got a kick out of, you know, Peyton got all the headlights on that one, and well deserved. But man, Geno was in there doing some work.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Hey, who gets your mini game ball on special teams?
I've got to give it to Mandel.
I'll second that. There's nothing else happened. While he deserves it, there's no other way anybody else could get anything.
I'm going to say this. We had gone through the game, and I knew that we had not punted. And so we'd gotten into the fourth quarter, and I was like, oh, I can't wait to do the podcast and give my mini game ball and special teams to the player who didn't play.
Mandel, that would have been good.
Mandel was going to get it.
That would have been good. I don't know what that says about some other aspects of our special teams. I guess on special teams real quick, I did notice Amari Cooper was back in safety on kickoff, which if he was back as one of the two safety men, coach must have think his ankle was good to go now.
Yeah, that was a good spot. That's exactly right.
What do you think about this Georgia team flipping to this game real quick? I truly, as we were getting ready for this, to a certain extent, man, we're kind of playing a mirror image of us. I know they've had a whole different way to get here, but they have a very good defense, 10 returning defensive players who quite frankly, there were suspensions and there were other things going on at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. But then on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, they're the most balanced team that we've played. It's like we're playing ourselves on the offensive side of the ball.
In some sense, this will probably be unintentional humor. They might be the most balanced team we've played since Mississippi State. Is there a truly balanced team that we've played?
No, but I just, the stats.
They're better than Mississippi State. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to draw that comparison, but who else has been equally as talented in both, you know, you could say LSU, but they had sort of a breakout, you know, watershed performance by their quarterback. He'll never do that again. So that's not balance, you know, to come in and look at film and say, well, they literally can beat you running and passing. You know, Mississippi State, they were 7-0 at the time, and they were beating people in both phases of the game. You know, Georgia's better than them, but they're beating people with both phases of the game.
And I guess to be fair, when I say true balance for a second, they obviously are not, you know, as close as we are, but they're right there between their rushing and passing, and those two young running backs have really brought something to them. And then I think the maturity of their quarterback, I think he's the best quarterback in the SEC. No offense to AJ. I think this is going to be a really big test for our defense.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're talking about mirror imaging. They're close to that on defense as well. They run a 3-4. They've got big John Jenkins, you know, 350-pounder, you know, Cody-esque. I think coach even drew some of that comparison. Todd Grantham is coordinating their defense, and, you know, he coached under Saban at Michigan State. And so there's principles, you know, that, you know, it was a long time ago, but there's, you know, some principles maybe that have made their way through. And so, yeah, in a lot of ways they are, you know, a mirror image. If we want to really kind of get crazy with some of the analogies, you know, maybe they are us in 2008 and 2009, and, you know, we're the Florida of that sort of time frame. You know, I don't know. We'll see how the game plays out. I do think that top to bottom, I do think that we're a better team. That even goes to just the recruiting classes and the depth. But I think frontline to frontline, they're good, and I think this is just like Florida back in 2010, less worried about who we would play in the championship game. Whoever wins the SEC will have the upper hand, and, you know, this may be the de facto championship game.
Oh, sure, and what I meant about the balance is, you know, they come in with the 17th ranked scoring offense, whereas we surprisingly come in with the 15th ranked scoring offense. But whereas we are 77th passing and 22 rushing, they are 39 and 35. And so that's what I meant by the balance real quick is how they do that. And we haven't played that this year. And so something's got to give, right? We're coming in scoring 39 points a game. They're coming in scoring 38 points a game.
what do you expect from a score from this ball game? Because obviously the one thing that's kind of slanted is Georgia's defensive stats. You know, they gave up more points earlier in the year, which has kind of skewed their numbers, but their defense has played very well the last 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that our experience in these big game situations, Georgia played an SEC championship game last year. I get that. But playing for these championship games, for the opportunity to play for the national title. And of course, we've played in title games. So I think our guys have more of a hardened edge from that perspective. And then just in terms of game preparation, you have to give the nod to Saban. So, you know, clearly I'm leaning that way with my pick. I think it's a 24-17 game. I think it's close.
Well, I was going to say they were going to put up 16. I do not think that we will score in the 30s either. I was going to say something like a 27-16 ball game, which is equally as close, but I'll take either one of our scores in this one, obviously.
I'll take the win, right? Let's walk out of the dome with a win, and we can toast it up in South Beach.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, hey, man, I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for listening, and roll tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.